Now, we're holding on page 44 in SOTA, about the middle of the page, middle of Os Mentes. We were learning last time about how Moshe found Yosef's coffin. We had one version that Yosef's coffin, that the Mithraim had sunk it in the Nile, and Moshe couldn't figure out where it was, so he goes to Serach and asks her, and she tells him, and Moshe goes there and says, Yosef, you need to float up, otherwise we're going to be potter from the Shavua, because we have no way of getting to your Aron, and the Aron floated to the surface, and Moshe was able to take it. So that's one version of what happened. So the Gemara continues, Reb Nosson Omer, the Kabon Nitcha Molochim Hayakover. Reb Nosson says that Yosef's coffin was not in the Nile, it was in the Kabonit of the kings. And it means the burial places of the kings. It actually says Kabonit is Loshen Yevoni. Now Kabonit itself is used occasionally in the Gemara, and in Midrashim it means something like a governor. But that wouldn't really fit over here. There is an interesting possibility that maybe the word is not Kabonit with a kuf, but rather Labonit with a lamed, which would be like the English word labyrinth. As in, you have, like, they had mazes inside their pyramids, and they had Yosef's coffin somewhere in there, and how's Moshe supposed to figure out where to find it? So, Halach Moshe va'omad al-kabon et shamalachim, so Moshe goes and stands by the entrance of this area, especially, Maushal says, in other words, that he brings from the Oruch. The point is, it's not just, maybe it was a maze, maybe not, but the point is, there's also a lot of coffins over there. How is Moshe supposed to recognize the one from Yosef? So he goes, Omar, he calls out, Yosef, the time has come that Hashem has sworn to redeem the Jewish people, the time for fulfilling the shvur that you beswore the Jewish people to take you out has come. If you show yourself then good, then we can take your coffin with us. If not, then we're clean and we're innocent of your shvur, because we did what we could. And as we talked about last time, the Taz actually learns a halacha from here about when you have a shvur that involves somebody else's participation. That if he doesn't keep his end of it, then you don't have to keep yours. So at that moment, Yosef's coffin started shaking, started trembling. Ion Yaakov points out, you know, before when we had by the Oren, we didn't need it to tremble. It's the only one in the river. But here, as Marshall said, you had a whole bunch of them, so it needed to start trembling and vibrating so Moshe would notice it. So now Moshe was able to go in there and take that coffin and take it with him. Either way, according to either version, so Moshe was able to take it. So now, continues the Braisa, V'chol Osen Shonim Shahoyu Yisrael Bamidbar, throughout all the years that Moshe was in the desert, Hoya Arona Shor Yosef V'oren Shor Shchinim Ahauchin Zeim Zeh. The coffin of Yosef and the Oren of the Shekhinah with the Luchos inside were traveling one next to the other. They carried them both in procession at the head of the Jewish people. And passers-by, Bedouins or whatever, traders wandering through the desert would wonder, what's the deal with these two coffins? Why are these two coffins being carried together? Marsha points out, we learned before, that the coffins of all the Shvatim were taken out of Mitzrayim, but they, each Shevet, carried their own. Here Moshe was the one who was carrying Yosef, and so he, or one of the other Levim, was carrying him at the head of the procession. So people are wondering what these two are doing, one next to the other. Ion Yaakov points out, especially, I mean, they can recognize one of them seems to be large enough to be a mess. So they can realize that it must be a mess, and a mess is metame. How are you putting it together with the Oren, with the Luchos? So the Yidden would answer them, Echad shal mes, v'echad shal shchina. One is of a dead person, and the other one is of a shchina. Omru, so the Goyim would wonder, v'chi, da'ke shal mes v'halach m'shchina, is it normal to carry a dead body side by side with the shchina? Omru, so the Jewish people would explain to them, Kiyim zeh kol mashakos v'zeh. The one who's in this coffin, Yosef, fulfilled everything that it says in this one, in the Aseret HaDibros that are in the other Oren. Rashi brings actually from a Medrash, from the Chilta on Parshas Beshalach, when it tells over there how Yosef took Yosef's coffin by Yikach Moshe's Atzmas Yosefimo, and then the Medrash brings the same point about the people would wonder what they're doing together. The Medrash says that in fact we can find in Psukim that Yosef was Mekayim every one of the Aseret HaDibros. So Rashi starts by bringing a few of them, and the Mechilta brings the rest. The first Dibra is Anochi Hashem Alekecha. Yosef says to his brothers, Asachas Alekim Ani, am I instead of Hashem? Implying there's only one Hashem, and I'm not him. Lo Yilcha, corresponding to that, he says, Esel Kinani Yore. He says, I fear Hashem, implying, and nobody else. Loisisa, don't swear in Hashem's name falsely. We find that when Yosef is still pretending, is still making the pretense to his brothers that he's just the mean Egyptian viceroy and not their brother. So at one point, a few times, he swears in Pare's name, Chei Pare in Ketsu Mizeh, and other such psukim, meaning he's not going to swear falsely in Hashem's name. If he's going to have to pretend swear, he's going to do it in Pare's name. We find when they came the second time that he tells the person in charge of his household, shecht and prepare meat for the Shabbos meal that we're all going to eat together. So we see that he kept Shabbos. There's even actually a different point with that as well. The next morning, when the brothers leave, so they saddled up their donkeys and they left. Fine, you know, Mephoshim talk about there may have been a matter of Pekuach Nefesh. Their families back home in the Tzrayim are starving, but nevertheless, though, we see that Yosef calls them back. They hadn't even gotten past the Tchum Shabbos before Yosef sent Menashe to get them back as fast as possible, so that way they don't end up being Mechal Shabbos and going outside the Tchum. So we see also how careful he was with Shabbos. And you keep on going through that. And we see that at the beginning when Yaakov told him to go see how his brothers are faring, he went, even though he knew they hated him. He didn't go and kill Potiphar, even though Potiphar had him thrown in jail and all that. Loisinaf with Potiphar's wife. Loisigno, he brought all the money to Pare that came in from all the sale of grain he brought to Pare's palace. He didn't keep any of it for himself. Loisana Bereacha Eid Shok. He never told Yaakov that his brothers had mistreated him and sold him. So the Medrash says if he wouldn't even tell something truthful about them, Allah has kind of a kami, he certainly wouldn't say something untrue about them. And Lo Sachmoid, where was Lo Sachmoid? Don't remember offhand. Well, yeah, that's true. So maybe it was Lois Achmed H. I thought there was something else, but I can't remember it now. Whatever. We see that he was Mekayim, all the Esther's and Dibros, and in addition, Rashi points out also from the Medrash over there, we see that there are several of the mitzvahs that are not independently in the Esther's and Dibros. They're elsewhere in the Torah, and Yosef was very good with them. Lois Sisna, Sechicha, Bobavecha, Lois Sikon, Lois Sitter, Vecheyachicha, Imach. So we see that he was Mekayim, the whole Torah, and therefore that justifies them taking his body, his bones, next to the Oren that contains the Luchas. So the Gemara asks, what are we saying over here? We're saying that, to begin with, we said in the Mishnah that Moshe was personally involved in taking Yosef out of Mitzrayim. And therefore we said, that was Midah Keneged Midah for the fact that Yosef himself had taken the initiative to take Yaakov's body out of Eretz Mitzrayim and bring it to burial in the Maris Machpelah. And therefore Midah Keneged Midah Hashem had Moshe do that on behalf of Yosef. So the question is, V'ilo i'asik be Moshe, are you telling me that if Moshe had not been involved with him, loy havam i'asik be Yisrael, wouldn't the rest of the Jewish people be involved? Meaning, in other words, Rashi says, the question is that at the end of, so Moshe passed away, obviously he can't take care of the coffin anymore, at that point it reverts to the Jewish people. Now, V'hoksiv, now the pasuk says, V'es atzmes Yosef asher helu b'nei Yisrael mitzrayim kovru b'shchem. The pasuk says that they took Yosef's bones, that Bnei Yisrael had taken out of Mitzrayim. Now, note, it doesn't say that Moshe had taken out of Mitzrayim. It says that Bnei Yisrael took out. Kovru b'Shem, they buried the bones in Shem. So the question is, in other words, so we see that the pasuk is mentioning. So in other words, Rashi explains the question is, Taka, why weren't the rest of the Jewish people concerned about the Shavuot? Their ancestors had all sworn to Yosef that they were going to take him out of Mitzrayim when the time comes. Why did they leave it only to Moshe and they didn't bother? Now, Marsha says, what kind of a question is that? We learned before, they were busy with Bizas Mitzrayim. They're busy getting all the gold and silver and whatnot from Mitzrayim, so they didn't bother. So Marsha says the question is like this. Fine. At the time they were leaving Mitzrayim, fine. They figured they have that mitzvah to do, and therefore they figured that's more important or it overrides the mitzvah of taking Yosef. But now, throughout the 40 years, why did they leave it only to Moshe? Especially we see that after Moshe passed away, they did take charge of it. So what prevented them from taking charge of it all those years before that? And we see that the pasuk does say that Bnei Yisrael buried him in Shem. So the two, and furthermore, Eloi Asku Be Israel, even if you're going to say, for whatever reason, the rest of the Jewish people weren't necessarily going to involve themselves with taking care of Yosef's bones, Bonavoy Havum Asku Be, wouldn't Yosef's own descendants, Shevet Ephraim and Manasseh, be involved? V'hoksiv. And that same pasuk, after it describes that Yosef's bones were buried in Shechem, in Kevo Yosef, which is Eir Ada Yom Hazeh, except that the Arabs keep on vandalizing it, but anyway, So the pasuk finishes off by Yiyul of Bnei Yosef l'Nachla. This became an inheritance for Bnei Yosef, meaning like it became a major landmark in their territory. Our ancestor Yosef HaTzadik is buried over here, and so the point is it was very chaviv to them, it was very precious to them that their ancestor is buried in their territory. All the Shvatim had that, by the way, but the pasuk is making the biggest deal about it, about Yosef. So that being the case, so why are we saying, why throughout the 40 years did they leave it to Moshe, and why afterwards are we saying that Bnei Yisrael collectively were involved? Why didn't Shevet Yosef specifically take care of it? Omru, so the reason is, they thought to themselves, and both groups said to themselves, Hanichuloi, let's leave things as they are, and let those who are dealing with it deal with it. First of all, it's more of a covenant for Yosef that the many people should be involved with him more than the few. So in other words, Shevet Yosef is not going to just take control of it alone, because they figure it's a greater honor to Yosef that the whole Jewish people collectively are involved in taking him and burying him. And the two Amru, furthermore, they said, let's leave it well enough alone. It's more of a cover that the great one, Moshe, should be involved with him more than the lesser ones, the rest of us Jewish people who are nowhere near Moshe's caliber. So in other words, so once Moshe had taken him out of Mitzrayim, then they figured, let's leave well enough alone, because it's a greater covered that Moshe should be continuing to deal with it. And then when Moshe passed away, then the rest of the Jewish people all got involved, and Shevet Yosef didn't protest, because again, they figured it's more covered for it to be with Merubin, with a larger number of people. Iyun Yaakov over here brings in this connection something that he wrote in his Shilas Atruvus. Shavus Yaakov, that still kind of have the question of Marsha, that when they buried him in Shechem, it wasn't at the time when they're collecting the spoils of Mitzrayim, as opposed to when they were leaving Mitzrayim, they're busy collecting the spoils. So that alone neatly explains the reason for the difference. So the Iyun Yaakov brings that, if all of them had gotten involved at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, they still would have had time afterwards to go and ask for the gold and silver. They wouldn't have lost it out. But they were busy with the gold and silver, so therefore Moshe exclusively got the credit. And the question is then, why did they not afterwards do things differently? And the answer is because then, at that point, they figured, HaNichol mitzvah b'gdolim, yeah. Next, so that pasuk that we just quoted from the end of Sefer Yoshua says Kavru b'Shechem. They buried Yosef in Shechem. Now the question is, why Davke in Shechem? You have Shevet Yosef's territory between Ephraim and Manasseh, and Eivor HaYarden and Eretz Yisrael proper is a very large area. Why did they pick specifically the city of Shechem? So the answer is Omru, they said, or the Gira say in the printed Gemara, Omru Abchama Bachanina, Mishchem Gnavuhu, because they originally kidnapped him from Shechem, or the Shechem Nachzer Aveda, and to Shechem is where we'll return the thing that was lost. You have even in Halacha sometimes, you have a case, for example, a person steals a sheep from the flock, he has to return it to the same flock where it was originally. So the same way, they figured, we'll return Yosef to where he was. The Medrash brings a mushal on it, something along the lines of that a ganav breaks into somebody's house and steals a barrel of wine and drinks it. So the Balabas finds him and says, you know what, listen, the wine's fafal, and at least put the barrel back where you found it. So the same way, at least we can put back Yosef's bones. Now, what does this mean, Mishchem Gnavuhu? Rashi points out, now we have like this, in Parshas Vayeshev, the brothers are grazing their sheep in Shechem, and Yaakov sends Yosef from Hebron to Shechem to see how they're faring. Yosef comes to Shechem, and he's wandering around, he can't find them, and he finds an Ish, Gavriel, and he asks him, where are they, and the man tells him that they're in Doson. So Yosef goes and finds them in Doson, and that's where the whole rest of the story unfolded. So on the face of it, Rashi says, what do you mean, they sold them in Shechem, then they sold them in Doson. So Rashi says over here, Doson is not actually the name of a place. What it means is, rather, Rashi brings on the psukim over there in Parshas Vayeshev, that the word Doson stands for Nichle Dosos. for like legalistic excuses and plots to be able to kill Yosef. They had their various reasons that they thought that Yosef is a danger to the future of the Jewish people, and they have to eliminate him. So therefore, Dosan stands for Nichlei Dosis, meaning, in other words, even when the Ish tells Yosef about this, he's hinting to him, he's trying to give him a hint that, you know what, your brothers do not have your best interests in mind, maybe you would do well not to go and look for them any further. But Yosef either didn't get the hint, or figured, you know what, I'm a shliach mitzvah and I'm not going to be harmed, and he goes and he goes ahead. There is even, by the way, a vote. I don't remember who says this, but there is a vote that was actually Yosef's mistake. As long as he's going to Shechem, he's a shliach mitzvah, because Yaakov had sent him to Shechem. Once he leaves there and goes to another place, then he's not a shliach mitzvah anymore. But anyway, so Rashi over here is saying, therefore, so when the man tells him that they said Neuchel Dosona, and Yosef went and found them in Dosan, doesn't mean a name of a place, Dosan. It means rather that he's hinting to him that they're trying to plot against you, and Yosef sure enough goes and finds that sure enough they are plotting against him. So therefore, that justifies saying that he was in fact sold in Shechem. There's a relevant Gemara on this in Sanhedrin as well, where it also mentions various things in Jewish history that happened in the city of Shechem, and one of them is the sale of Yosef, and Rashi over there brings the same question. There Rashi gives a different answer. Dosan is in fact the name of a place, but it's a little village near Shechem, so therefore it's called basically by the name of Shechem. Well, because the large city. We do actually find in Sefer Melachim there's a story involving Elisha and the Aramim, which takes place in the city of Dosan. So Pashtus, there is an actual place called Dosan, maybe not necessarily the same one as in the story of Yosef, especially because from that one it seems it was fairly close to Shomron, and Shechem and Shomron are a fair distance apart. But in any case, there is an actual place called Dosan, but Rashi over here was saying that's not the actual place where they sold him. It was rather in Shechem itself, or Rashi over there says that it was right outside Shechem, so therefore it can still be counted as part of Shechem. Marshall mentions in this connection another point. That was also you have in Parshas Vayechi when Yaakov tells Yosef, "Ani nosati lecha Shechem achad alachecha," that I'm giving you an extra Shechem over your brothers. Rashi mentions over here that it means that some mafreshim explain that. So Rashi himself explains the word Shechem can mean a portion. I'm giving you an extra portion. But Rashi also mentions over there that Shechem can mean the city of Shechem. And what is he giving it to him for? It's part of his territory anyway. Means that's where he's going to be buried. So the Gemara asks, Koshu Kroya Adodi. Now, we seem to have a contradiction in the Psukim. Because Ksiv Vayikach Moshe as Atmos Yosefim. First you have the Pasuk in Parshas Beshalach that Moshe took Yosef's bones with him, implying that Moshe alone is doing it. Uchtiv, but then that Pasuk from Yeshua that we've been talking about says, Ves Atmos Yosef Shehelu B'nei Yisrael Mimitzrayim Kovar B'Shem. So who was it? Was it Yosef only, or was it B'nei Yisrael? And then they buried him in Shem. So the answer is Amar of Chama Bar Chanina, because it's both. Kola Oseh Dava V'Leg Gomrei. If a person did something and he wasn't able to complete it, Uva Achav Gomrei, and somebody else came and completed it, Mal Olav Akosav Al Shem Gomrei Keilu Asoi. The Torah counts it for the one who finished it as though he did the entire thing. So in other words, on the one hand, we're saying, Marsha explains, the Torah wants to stress what a chacham Moshe was, as we learned last time, that he realized how vital it is to do this mitzvah, and that's far more important than any treasures that he can get from Mitzrayim, and it's a bit of a gnus for the Jewish people, that they were gnai for them, that they were busy with the gold and silver and whatnot. But now, again, when we said before that they continued to allow Moshe to take care of Yosef's bones throughout the 40 years, because Kvodim and Bigdolim, Yosef and Matanim, so now, therefore, it can be called, they, in the end, did complete the mitzvah, and therefore it's credited to them. Therefore, it can be counted as though, to begin with, they were the ones who took him out of Mitzrayim, even though, in fact, it was only Moshe at the time. That's what we're saying. In other words, Moshe was Nenas. He passed away. He couldn't complete it. But the point is, in other words, it's not just that the Jewish people took over then. Marsha explains, in effect, what the Gemara was saying before is, in effect, once they were out of Mitzrayim, then they willingly would have taken it over, except that they realized the greater covered for Yosef to be continued to be taken care of by Moshe. Therefore, already at that point, the taking him out of Mitzrayim in the first place can be counted to their credit. And therefore, the Pasuk can speak of Bnei Yisrael taking him out of Mitzrayim, even though it was actually Moshe who did the physical carrying.
Why is it not to mention here the part that Moshe Rabbeinu put on the Sinai first and the Aron Levi?
The Medrash mentions that. The Medrash mentions that when we talked about before about how the coffin was in the Nile and he put in a thing that said Alisha and then the coffin came up. Yeah, the Medrash mentions. Yeah, the Medrash mentions that Micha later on found that and used it for the Eagle. Yeah, we mentioned it and we mentioned it briefly on Thursday. Rav Elazar Omer. Rav Elazar says, not only that, but if a person begins a mitzvah and he had the opportunity to complete it, now here with Moshe, he didn't have the opportunity, but let's say you can have another situation where a person begins a mitzvah and he has the opportunity to complete it, but he doesn't bother. So then, such a person will be demoted from his high rank. Hashem will cause that he loses his high position. Dichtiv, as we find in connection with Yehuda. Yehuda had begun the job of saving Yosef's life because he had told the brothers, let's not kill Mabetza Kinara, because what are we going to gain from it? We may as well sell him to the Ishmaelim. So he began the process, but he didn't see it through. And therefore, the result was, and the positive, Yehuda went down among his brothers, meaning Hashem caused it that he lost, like this until then, his brothers all looked up to him. Now Hashem caused that he lost that position because he had begun the job of saving Yosef and he didn't complete him. Marsha points out that on Chumash, Rashi says a little differently. Here Rashi is saying it was Min HaShemayim. There Rashi says it was the brothers themselves. They turn on Yehuda and they say to him, you know what, you being our leader, if you had told us to send him home safely, we would have done that, and it's your fault that we didn't, and therefore we're demoting you, and you no longer are important among us. And either way, the Pasuk saying that it was at that time, Vayered Yehuda, Me'esachav, and therefore that's what it means. That happened because he didn't complete the mitzvah. It may also be the Gemara is darshaning in the sense that, like this, the Mefarshim talk about, actually the Sefer Olam, I think, talks about, when you think about it, it's a little hard to fit in all of the events of Perek Lamed Ches of Bereshis into the 22 years between when Yosef was sold and when they came down to Mitzrayim. You have by that time already, even Peretz has children of his own. So you have to fit in there Yehuda getting married and having two sons, Aaron Oinon, and them marrying Tomer each in their turn and dying, and then time passing and she realizing that Yehuda doesn't want to give her in marriage to Shayla, and then her going in and dressing herself up, etc., and then becoming pregnant and then bearing the two twins, and then enough time for Peretz himself to be old enough to have two children, Betzion and Chomel. So the Medrash and Seder Olam, the Bryson, Seder Olam does in fact find a way to fit it within the 22 years. But there are Mephoriotics, but basically, in other words, it comes down to that each of those boys would have been only like 7 or 8 years old when they had their children. Or in the case of Aaron Onan, when they didn't want to have children, as the case may be. But anyway, there are Mephoshim who learn that not necessarily. It could be that Yehuda married this Bathsheba sometime before that. So according to them, that this Jerusha of the Gemara might fit very nicely. Why is the Pasuk saying, but Esaiki, that Yehuda went down, if in fact his marrying Bathsheba and some parts of the story happened some years before that? But the Pasuk wants to stress that Vayhi bar Esaiki, when they sold Yosef, is when Yehuda was demoted from his position. Rav Shmuel Nachmani says, beyond that, a person starts a mitzvah and doesn't see it through, and there was no onus, he'll end up, Rachman al-Tzlan, burying his wife and children. Again, as with Yehuda, we see that Yehuda lost his wife and lost his children. Now, the children, to be sure, we have the famous reason because they were doing Ashkosas Zera. But nevertheless, Marsha points out, it really had to be both. The fact is, like we just said, according to Seder Olam, they were only each like 7 years old at the time. Normally, that's far below the age of Onshin Menashemayim. Normally, a person not punishable Menashemayim until he's 20 years old. And actually, it actually mentions elsewhere that before the Mabel was 100 years old even. So 7-year-old boys, what are they getting Misri de Shemayim for such a thing? So the vote would be because Yehuda was at fault for having failed to see through the salvation of Yosef, and therefore therefore it caused that now when his children acted badly, then Hashem took it out on them. What about his wife? So it doesn't say, but then the idea would be, again, because Yehuda failed to see, well, his wife already is an adult, but the Gemara does mention in a few other places that the Gemara does mention that a man's wife or his children can die, Rachman al-Tzlan, for certain averus of his, because Ishtar Kigufa, and as far as his children, when they're little, then they're basically considered his kinyan. Ion Yaakov points out there's kind of a midah connected midah over here. He doesn't see the mitzvah through to completion, so the same way he's not going to continue in his greatness to completion, he's going to end up getting demoted. And he doesn't want, his mitzvah is not having a future, so therefore he doesn't have a future either. Okay. The Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, talking further about Yosef and about the bones of Yosef. Yosef, why is Yosef called bones even in his lifetime? At the end of Chumash Bereishis, when he tells his brother, when he tells his brothers, why not Vahalisan as Gviyosi or whatever the Loshan in Chumash would usually be for a body. So even in his lifetime, he's being called bones. So the reason is because he did not protest about the covet of his father. Each time they're telling him, your servant, our father, and it's Yosef's father as well, and he wasn't Moshe in them. So therefore, so for that, he was called Aksomos. Now, to be sure, of course, Yosef couldn't blow his cover, but nevertheless, he could have told them, listen, this is your father you're talking about. I don't know who this guy is, but nevertheless, you don't have to be calling him your servant in my presence. So he could have done that, and for that, we're saying he was called Aksomos B'chayev. Marshal explains, the Gemara tells us in Nidda that you have Shloisha Shutfin Ba'adam, there's three partners in making a baby, the father, the mother, and the father, the mother, and Hashem. From the father, particularly, come the bones. The Gemara mentions that they're loiven, the white substance that comes from the father, that creates the various white parts of the body, including the bones. So now, when he didn't show proper covet for his father, so therefore he's called Aksomos, as if all there is from him is the part that was created from his father. There are a number of other reasons that Mephoshim give why specifically Aksomos. One, the Maharal says one vote is because when Yosef hears them talking like that and saying Abdecha Avinu, at least there should have been almost like an instinctive reaction, like something on his face, like how could he talk like that? And he didn't. He's like very, very like hard face. So connected that, he's called bones, which are hard. For that reason, the Medrash also mentions in that connection that for that reason, Yosef lost 10 years of his life. He should have lived to 120, and instead he lived to 110, because 10 times he heard them say, Abdecha Avinu. Mind you, it only says in Pesukim 5 times this expression, Abdecha Avinu. The vote is, though, remember, that they weren't speaking to him, they were speaking in Lashon Kodesh, and Yosef pretended that he didn't know Lashon Kodesh and needed a translator. So each time they're saying Abdecha Avinu, he hears it from them in Lashon Kodesh, and he hears Menashe saying it again to him in Egyptian, so therefore it comes out he actually hears it 10 times.
Oh.
Yeah.
Has Yosef corrected them when they said Abdecha Avinu? Would he be saving them from the same mistake all the time?
I guess, yeah. He would have been saving them from being disrespectful to their father, yeah. The Gemara continues, Omer of Yehuda Omer Rav, Vitemer of Yosi, Choma Barab Chanina, Mipnei Ma Mes Yosef Kodem Echav. Why did Yosef pass away before his brothers? Now, the part of the question is that he was the next to youngest of them. How comes it that his older brothers outlived him? So the reason is, because he acted in a domineering way. He was a ruler. So then, therefore, the Gemara mentions in Brachas, ruler tends to shorten a person's life. Marashah refers over here to something that he explains there on that Gemara in Brachas. The vote is, he says, usually the word manig atzmi rabbanus does not necessarily mean just that the person is a leader. Sometimes you have leaders who live long lives. You can find many examples. You know, our Rebbe lived to be 92. The Radvaz lived to be over 100. There's many examples like that. No, the vote is manigatzmer rabbanus. Marsha says over there generally means where the person like takes and demands the leadership for himself and does it basically whether you like it or not. I'm going to be your leader. So that tends to shorten a person's life. Now, to be sure, Marsha explains over there Yosef didn't do that. Abdurabi treated his brothers very respectfully, but nevertheless, the pasuk is mentioning that he lived shorter in order to imply this point. So fine, we don't say that Yosef himself acted that way, but to learn from him for future generations, if a person acts in that manig atzmi b'rabbanus way, then it will shorten his life. In the case of Yosef, it would be again because of the 10 times Abdecha Avinu or because of other considerations. The Zohar actually says that Yosef should have lived, the Zohar says differently. The Zohar says that Yosef should have lived to 147 like Yaakov, but he gave away 37 years of his life to David HaMelech. You have the famous thing where it says in the Medrash that Adam Rishon gave 70 years to David. The Zohar breaks it down and says Avraham gave him 5. He should have lived to 180. He lived to 175. Yaakov gave him 33 because he should have lived to 180 like Yitzchak, and he lived to 147. And Yosef gave him 37. Yosef gave him 28 or something, whatever. I forget how the Zohar makes the Cheshbon exactly.
It's real, it's taken away because...
There's also the vote that it was taken away because of the way he complained to Paré, but right, the Zohar was saying it's not only that it was taken away because of that, but it's also because he gave it away to David HaMelech, yeah. There's many different explanations why, if Adam Rishon already gave it to him, why the Ovis again had to give it to him. There's many, many different explanations in various Sforim of Achronim and in various places in Reb Lev Yitzchok's writings. He also explains why it is that Yitzchok didn't give him any, and there's all kinds of nuances and details in all that. Fine. Let's daushin some sukkim about Yosef's experiences in Mitzrayim. The pasuk says, "VeYosef hurad Mitzrayim." Yosef was brought down to Mitzrayim. Now the word hurad, okay, it literally means that the Midianim or the Yishmaelim or whoever it is that brought him down to Mitzrayim brought him down there. But the Gemara is going to find another meaning in the word hurad. In particular, the Rif says over here, because if it just meant that he was brought down by them, then it would be Horiduhu Mitzrayim or something like So Amar Rav Elazar, I'll take we Hurad Ela Horid. Don't read Hurad, he was brought down, but rather Horid, he brought down. What does that mean? Shahurid is Tagnine Pare Mugdulosan, his coming down caused eventually Pare's astrologers to lose their greatness. Years later, when Pare had his dreams and he didn't know what they meant and the astrologers couldn't help him, the Chartumim, then they lost their importance. So therefore, so Yosef's coming in the first place was all for that. Marashor explains also the reason why the Gemara is darshaning it is because you have like this. So in Parashas Vayeshev, it describes the sale of Yosef. Then it says that the Medonim brought him down to Mitzrayim, Medonim Mocheros to Mitzrayim. Then you have interrupts with the story of Yosef, with the story of Yehuda and his whole family. Then the Yosef Hurad Mitzrayim. Now we know already Yosef was brought down to Mitzrayim from the end of Perek Lamed Zayin. So why is it repeating over here at the beginning of Perek Lamed Tes is for this drasha over here. And Marashor explains, in other words, the vote is that to begin with, Yosef's being brought down to Mitzrayim was for this reason, in order for him to end up being dominating and causing them to lose their greatness and him dominating them. Marashor brings also from the Medrash that says the word Hurad is also Maloshim V'yered Miyom Ad Yom. He dominated and had control and rulership over them. Ion Yaakov gives a long vote over here along the lines of that basically part of the idea was that the result of it was also because they were demoted from their high position and Yosef meanwhile was elevated to Mishnah Lamelach, that's what made it possible for him to marry Potiphar's daughter, to marry Osnas, where otherwise they would have been on completely different ranks and he would have never would have happened. So the Eibishter makes everything happen, causes people to rise and to fall or whatever in order to make Shidduchim happen. The pasuk continues, "Vayiknehu Potiphar Sris Pare." The pasuk says that Potiphar, the Sris of Pare, bore him. Now, the simple meaning of Sris is a minister. But the word Sris also means someone who was castrated. So first of all, what's this word, "Vayiknehu"? Omer Rav Sheknoi La'atzmai. So Rav says it means he wasn't just buying him as a slave. He was buying him for himself. He wanted to use him for Mishkav Zohar. Yosef was very handsome, so therefore Potiphar is attracted to him in that way. Ion Yaakov points out, you know, the Gemara has an expression in a few places, we had it not long ago actually here in Yaakov, that the man and the woman tend to be involved in the same kind of thing. If one of them is involved in Znus, generally the other one is also, as we find with Achashverosh and Vashti, for example. So in the same way, if we know that Pare's wife, that Potiphar's wife is involved in Znus, she tried to seduce Yosef, then we have to realize that Potiphar himself was not such a great guy in that regard either. So therefore, Vayiknehu, he bought him for himself for that kind of thing. And again, part of the reason for the Drosha is because why does it have to say Sris Paroi? Again, it already told us at the end of Perek Lamed Zayin, the Potiphar Sris Paroi. So therefore, yeah. So what happened was, Bo Gavriel was Thursday, Bo Gavriel Proi. So Gavriel came and castrated him, and Gavriel came and then pulled him down. Rashi takes out the words Bo Gavriel v'Sersei, because it's the same thing. Sersei and Pare are basically the same thing, that he emasculated him and made him that he's unable to do such things anymore. So there are Mephoshim who talk about how we can actually have both of them. Marsha talks about that what it means is, in other words, that listen, it already said Lefortifa Sris Paroi, so therefore so we're saying serious Moloshim that he was castrated. But then in addition to proy, means beyond that, it's an even more, it's an even greater thing. Castration would just be, in other words, he's not able to father children, but he's still able, let's say, to have relations. Proy would mean he's not even able to do that. And how do we know that? How do we know that Gabriel came and uncovered him and made him completely unable to do anything like that? Because first he's called Potiphar, and later on Potiphera, so the Phera is Meloshin Proy, as in uncovered, and then emasculated him. Now, how do we know? Marshall says, how do we know that those are the same person? And in fact, the Ramaphosim was down a trap level, they're not necessarily. But Marshall says, the vote is like this. First of all, we know the Medrash about why was Potiphar's wife trying to get Yosef in the first place? Is because she saw with her astrology that she was able to foretell that she and Yosef are going to have descendants in common. So she jumped to conclusions and figured it's with her herself. In the end, it was with Osnas, who was their daughter or foster daughter, as the case may be. So that would neatly explain, therefore, now, if the Pasuk says that Yosef married Osnas, the daughter of Potiphar, that Medrash, that whole concept is only going to work only if Potiphar and Potiphar are the same person. And Marsha also explains the expression in the positive by Yitin Loyas Osnas Bas Potiphar, suggests that Potiphar, Potiphar himself, was not so that enthused about the Shidduch. Listen, this guy used to be my Eved. Why should my daughter or foster daughter or whatever marry him? And Pareh had to basically push it through. So that also, if Potiphar is some Egyptian nobleman, why would he have any objection to Yosef marrying his daughter more than anybody else? But if you say it was Potiphar, Yosef's former master, then he has very good reason to object. And Pareh says, listen, never mind your objections. This shidduch is going through whether you like it or not. Yeah. A point of it that is brought up, the Das Skenim Bali Atosis points out, now like this, you have in Parshas Vayeshev, you have with the whole story with Potiphar's wife, you have when she accuses Yosef falsely of trying to rape her, and then she makes a whole hullabaloo about it, and then the Pasuk says when Potiphar comes home, so she tells him about it, the whole version of the story, and then the Pasuk says that when Potiphar heard that his wife saying, Kadivorim ha'ela osa li'abdecha, your servant did to me like these kinds of things, and he got angry and threw him in jail. And Rashi brings over there, Kadvorim Ela, Osi Weabdecha, means when Pareh and his wife are having Tashmish, then she tells him this is the kind of thing that Yosef was trying to do to me. Now, the question is, Daskeinim asks, wait a minute, if we're saying over here that Gavriel did this to Potiphar, then how are they having Tashmish anyhow? So Daskeinim gives a couple of different answers. First of all, there's not any actual Tashmish. It could be other kinds of Chibuf Gnishuk or whatever, and several other explanations, including maybe it wasn't that he was permanently maimed like that, but only when he tried to get anywhere near Yosef, then he would be prevented. Yeah. Yeah, I know.
In other words, he couldn't do it now, but he did in the past.
Yeah, maybe. But here we're talking about after he's Yosef is in his house for a year. Marsha, by the way, points out, now like this, you have, in Halacha, you have something called Swiss Chama, where a person, you have a baby is born. And you see when he grows up, when he becomes the age where normally he should be developing Shtei Cyrus and the other simonim of manhood, he doesn't, and it can mean it's called Swiss Chama, and one reason for it is because it means he was exposed to too much heat in the womb, and that damaged those glands and those hormones and whatnot in his body. Well, therefore, in other words, we see a person can be made a sardis by heat. Well, then Marshall says Gavriel being the Malach of fire. That's why he was the one to do this job. With that said, though, Daskeinim over there, one of the answers that Daskeinim gives is there are actually two ways in which a person can become a sardis. There can be a sardis because of too much heat. There can also be because of too much cold. And they explain one of the answers is that the type that Potiphar had after this was the cold type, and therefore that didn't prevent him from being with his wife. It just prevented him from being with Yosef. Fine. Next. The Mishnah had continued, Piska, Mi Lonu God, actually, you know what, we'll leave this for tomorrow, that's the Shania. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach HaGa'ola, what is today, Chof Ir. In Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, you have that the minhag is that we count for a minion with the pasuk Shia Samecha because there's 10 words in it. Now you look in earlier Sfarim, the earliest source that we have of using a pasuk like that to count people for a minion is in Sefer HaParadis from Rashi, and there it says that you use the pasuk Vani Beroiv Chaftecha, which also has 10 words. So where is Kitzur Shulchan Aruch getting that you use a Shias Amecha? So the Rebbe explains in a sicha, in the later generations, as we come closer to the times of Mashiach, we have this tremendous manifold darkness of Golos. So when 10 Jews are gathering together, the first thing we want to do is beg for the Geula. So therefore, that's why that would be why the minute changed to use that pulse, because it's a plea for the Geula. As soon as you have 10 Jews together, then right away, that's the first thing that comes out. In Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, we are up to a new simon, the halachas of Yom Tov. So you have later on, you have the halachas of specific Yom Tov and Pesach and Shavuos and Sukkos, but now, for now, this is the general, this and the next couple of simonim are the general dinim of Yom that apply on all Yom Tov. The first basic rule is the same 39 malachas that you can't do on Shabbos, you can't do on Yom Tov, with certain exceptions, as we're going to say, and the same way as on Shabbos, you can't have a goy do it for you, same thing on Yom Tov, and the same way as on Shabbos, you can't have an animal do malacha for you, so it is on Yom Tov. The difference, ein ben Yom Tov, the Shabbos, ela oichol nefesh bilvad, as the Mishnah says, namely, and the reason is, because the Pasuk in Parshas Bo mentions, achashe yo'ochol l'chol nefesh, u'levadei yo'osel l'chem. So that would mean, you have certain malachas involving food preparation, or things related to that, that are allowed on Yom Tov. So, the specific ones that are allowed as far as food preparation are, you can knead dough, you can bake, you can shecht, you can cook, you can carry in and out on Shabbos, and you can use a fire, but not make a fire. So those kinds of things, we also have the concept in halacha called mitoich. First of all, you have a question why it's only those. The big machlokas at poskim, is it that fundamentally, really, all of them, is it that midaraisa, only those are mutter on Yom Tov, or is it rather that midaraisa, there might have been other ones that are mutter as well, but the chachamim ban those because anything that you could have done before Yom Tov, and it wouldn't ruin the taste or anything of it, then the Chum don't want you doing it on Yom Tov. So let's say, for example, harvesting. Would you be allowed to do, you can't do that on Yom Tov. It's not in this list over here. But is that because Daraisa, it's also on Yom Tov? Or is it because Daraisa, it would have been Mutter, but Midrabanan, you can't because there's no reason you couldn't have harvested yesterday. So in any case, all these malachas, we have the concept in halacha called mitoich shehutra l'tzorech, hutra nami shelo l'tzorech, and therefore, for example, carrying, you have the famous machlokas, there's Shama Basil about this, but of course the halacha is like Basil, that once you're allowed to carry out food on Shabbos, then you're allowed to carry other necessities that are needed for Yom Tov as well. As long as, now there does have to be, the rule is, as we're going to go through, it has to be shovel a chol nefesh, it has to be something which is commonly used by people, or for tzorech mitzvah. So we're going to have examples in the siman of things that are not shovel chol nefesh, things that are only certain, like certain finicky people or whatever use, those you don't have a heter for on Yom Tov. But basically, other than that, you have this idea of mitoich. So for example, one example is, he says over here, don't light a yortzeit candle on Yom Tov. That would not be, even though you're allowed to light one fire from the other for Shabbos candles or whatever, but a yortzeit candle would not be considered in that category, because it's not melechas ochel nefesh, and it's not it's kind of tzorech Yom Tov that you have to do before Shabbos. Sure. Before Yom Tov, I mean, yeah.